Welcome to our Farming Water Scotland podcast series. Over this series, we'll be looking at various mitigation options, guidance and farmers' experience to help manage and improve water quality on the farm and surrounding area. In today's podcast, we'll be discussing the impact of water availability within Scotland, looking back to 2025 with Pete Wright from SECA. I'm Fiona Salter, an environmental consultant with SAC Consulting and host for today's podcast. So obviously we're here to talk specifically about 2025 and the impact it had on Scotland with water availability. Do you want to just give us a recap?
Yeah, towards the start of the year, because we had that low recharge from autumn into winter 24 through to 25, there wasn't the levels of water. So even on the west coast, where we normally see plentiful volumes of water, we were starting to see some areas just tipping into those drought conditions, which was causing quite concern for quite a number of land managers and farmers and other industries as well. So yeah, there's quite a lot going on the start of the year. And the West Coast did tend to recover a little bit quicker. So the situation did improve. But like I said, it was always there. It was always hanging around throughout the whole year. Everybody had to keep an eye on it.
And because it started so early, was there quite a significant impact on the environment? Because it was quite a key point within the agricultural calendar.
Yeah.
With water use. And so if we talk about the environment, and then we can talk about the impact to actual farmer businesses.
Yeah, because of the early start, it raised a few alarm bells, really, with water levels being so low in April and May. And that there were some specific areas where there was protected species were starting to get impacted. So things like freshwater pearl mussels are very sensitive and a good indicator for water quality as well. They were getting impacted because the area of the wetted stretch of some of these rivers was really constrained, and some of these freshwater pearl mussels, for example, were being exposed. Other areas and things like that. The challenge when it comes to seeing what the impact on the environment is, you can see an instant impact, like the freshwater pearl mussels. There's no water for them, so therefore, if you don't get moved, which you can do under licence, they're gonna die. Or if there's not enough water in the river, you're not gonna get the salmon going up the river, whatever it is. The challenge is getting these, seeing the environmental impact on things like invertebrates and the smaller end of the things that we look at. They're really the kind of things we can get a quick indication from doing some kind of bankside ecology assessments and that kind of stuff, and just seeing what's tailing down. But what we're trying to do now over the 3 or 4 years we've had, where we've had quite dry conditions, is we're starting to collect evidence now year on year to see what impact does a dry 2025 have on 2026. So what we're starting to do now is kind of collect the evidence as we go along. We can see immediate impacts. We have very basic, like I said, bankside assessments, which can kind of give you a quick indicator of the impact of dry weather. But what that has on these communities of invertebrates that are referred to by the ecologists is we need to collect that information year on year. So we are doing some quite significant in-depth work with our ecology staff within CEPA to see what the impact drought has on next year. So the impact can be quite minimal during the event. It's the impact that drought has on that community going forward, which we need to look at. But like I said, there are certain species which we can say, right, okay, it's dry. If we don't do something about that now, those species are going to become under threats, like freshwater pearl mussels and stuff, that kind of thing.
That'll be really interesting when that's out.
Yes, it will be. It's quite a significant amount of work. And there's some case studies getting looked at and some research work which is getting done as well. So it's certainly been identified as a significant thing we need to look at, because it will change behaviours when it comes to what can be abstracted when, what the triggers are for saying when things are drought. We might find that some species are more drought resilient than others. We may find that some are more prone to becoming damaged because of drought. So it just allows us to kind of focus and tailor our measures that little bit better.
And then moving into the impact that, we'll talk about the start of the season on the agricultural community.
Yeah.
And from a SEPA's perspective, because obviously that was quite a challenging time for all and worrying time for all as the season began.
underlying all of SEPA's actions when it comes to water scarcity is the National Water Scarcity Framework. So there is a document out there, which whether we read or not, it's been produced. So that's the kind of how we work. And inside that, it kind of outlines what SEPA's stages are when it comes to kind of managing the environment, managing the water as a resource to, so that we can protect the environment, but also be proportionate when it comes to the activity, to the constraints that we're putting on water abstractors. And like we said, you know, agriculture abstractions are quite significant throughout Scotland. So the impact it was having on farmers was meant that as soon as an area, what we refer to as a drat area, which is basically a hydrological area defined by a water catchment, as soon as that area kind of got to what we call a significant water scarcity, which meant it was below a normal low level for more than 30 days, it meant that SEPA had to enact our water scarcity conditions, which mean that we restrict the flows of water that abstractors can take from the water, which they would normally do. And that can be quite a significant volume that we say you can't take. We could suspend licenses if there is the need for us to do that, to protect the environment, to protect those species that we were talking about, but also to protect some of the kind of vital infrastructure that's around as well. But one thing that we are trying to do is we're trying to work with the farming sector to say, right, okay, we can provide you an amount of water to allow you to continue your abstraction and your irrigation purposes, just so that you don't have complete dry out, you know. But obviously there are situations where there are certain crops which do need quite a significant amount of water at that time of year. So there was an inevitable impact on the businesses when it comes to that. But like I said, what we try to do, we try to give them as much warning as possible. We've got a 3 or 4 level stage kind of awareness raising campaign that which we do. We tell them when it's getting dry. We tell them when it's starting to get moderately significant, so it's starting to creep down to that more. And then when it gets that significant period again, we have to enact these license conditions. But we try to give as much notice as possible. And that notice is to allow farmers to kind of plan their cropping. I know it's done well in advance of the period, but it allows them to kind of plan their water use, you know, making sure they're getting the most from their water, you know, adapting how they irrigate their crop and how they can think about what management methods they can put in that short period of time that they're given the heads up. We know it's challenging, but I've got I'm not going to say positive feedback from the agricultural sector because it's not going to be an easy thing to deal with, but we're really encouraged about how the agricultural sector worked with us when it came to those restrictions being put in place. And we've already seen quite a lot of forethought, which we'll come into one a bit later, about how people manage those tricky times when it comes to reductions in water availability. So, so the main steps that we take are we provide as much advance notice as possible when it comes to what restrictions are getting put in place, and we make sure people know what those restrictions are going to be before those restrictions are put in place so they can put that into their management.
No, there's a lot of information that SEPA do disseminate to the wider community, and like the water, I don't know if we want to raise like the water scarcity report that runs.
It starts April. So each week SEPA have committed to producing a water scarcity report.
It's really useful.
It's really useful. There's loads of information in there, and it's done in a concise way so that if you want a quick snapshot of what's happening in your area, you can go to the water scarcity report and find exactly what's happening in your river catchment. And it allows you to go delve that little bit more into detail as well. That's produced every Thursday. It comes out on SEPA's website, and it's easy to access. And there's like frequently asked questions attached to it as well. And it basically throughout the year, the information builds because we're getting a clearer message and clearer patterns are coming through. And that is updated on a Thursday, and that tends to be when the levels of water scarcity also get decided upon as well. So if something's going to be tipping up to the significant water scarcity, that water scarcity report is an ideal place to get the information and get a heads up as well, because there's a countdown in there as well, and there's a map on the water scarcity report. There's also a table as well, which allows you to kind of figure out where you are when it comes to that countdown, when it comes to getting to significant water scarcity.
No, that's really good. Just to see a snapshot, and then you can find out the information you actually need to know about your area.
Yeah.
So looking at how SEPA actually disseminate information to farmers, how is that done?
Yeah. So there's the website, which has got the water scarcity report on, which was released every Thursday, which I've talked about. But what was developed for agriculture and all license holders was what we refer to as the FIMS messaging service, which is a direct way that we communicate to license holders about their own abstraction license. So we have got a database of everybody who's got a license. We know the volumes of water they can take, and we know the locations that they can take them from. And what this FIMS message allows us to do, it allows us to give people the heads up when it comes to that countdown. So as soon as the water, as a water area starts to hit that that countdown to significant water, farmers, whiskey distilleries, whatever it may be, anybody who's got an abstraction license within Scotland will get a message if their area is starting to get to water scarcity. So, for example, I'm here in the Spey. If I was a farmer in the Spey and the water levels were starting to get towards that drought conditions, the first day that it tips over that edge to moderate water scarcity, I will get a text message and an email saying, Pete, your abstraction license is this, your locations you're taking your abstraction from is here. We're letting you know that the countdown is on when it comes to potentially having to have an impact on your license to reduce the volumes of water you can extract. Think about what you can do for your activities to reduce that volume. So hopefully it'll rain after that, and then it'll take you out of the drought conditions. But if it continues to go down, once we get to that 30 days past that Q95 value, that value of low flows in the river, that's when significant water scarcity hits. And again, you'll be contacted by email and by a text message to say, you were told about this X days ago, you were getting down to this water scarcity, significant water scarcity level. We're now at significant water scarcity. You will be required to take action, and that action will be to either A, stop abstracting your water because there isn't enough water in the catchment for you to allow your activity to continue, or reduce your levels of extraction to this amount, and the information will be provided to you about how much volume of water you can take. So we have got the ability to send one-to-one direct messages to farmers and other abstraction license holders, which is exactly what we were asked to do. So that's what we've delivered. But on the back of that, this FIMS messaging system also allows us to send out general communications. So we can send out information if there is a pot of money available through a particular financing scheme. We can send that information out, and we can target it to a catchment, to a sector, to the whole of Scotland, whatever we want to do. We can direct that message directly to the people who need it. Mm-hmm. And we found that was really good. Exactly. Yeah. Whether the funding's relevant. So we won't be sending funding information to the distillery sector if it's not appropriate for them. If it's something for the agriculture sector, we'll send it directly. If it's something which is just available for a particular catchment, we'll send that information as well. It just gives us that ability to have that one-to-one direct contact with the abstraction holder, the people who are actually getting affected on a day-to-day impact on this one. So it's a really useful tool. And there may be more uses of that going forward, and we're having conversations with the likes of NFUS and other stakeholders about, what information do farmers want on a regular basis? Is it more than just that countdown clock information, or is there other information that we can send timely reminders to? We're expecting 5 days of intense heat in your catchment. Think about what you're going to do when it comes to abstraction and irrigation. So there's lots of uses for it. We're just going to have to trial a few things to see what works best.
So obviously we're talking about building farmers' resilience into the extremes. I'm just going to use the extremes. Yeah. But is there any information on the trends? Because obviously we said 2025 was quite unique. We've had a few years over the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Do you have to talk about, is this going to set to increase?
Yeah, this is not a one-off year. This is the kind of thing that it was talked about. It was like a 1 in 20 year drought of 20 years ago. We were thinking this is never going to be happening. But now it is a case of, in the last 20 years, the last 3 years have been classed as drought conditions. Even if you think it's particularly wet some years, it's the way that that rainfall is landing. You know, it's landing short, short, sharp bursts, which isn't good for anything. It's not good for flooding. It's not good for crop production. And it's not good to kind of have that resilience to drought in there as well. So the chances of drought happening are now getting more and more likely. So it's almost like a 50% chance of getting a drought the next year. It's getting to that situation.
50,
yeah, it's getting to the chance that next year there will be a drought, because that compound impact of having a drought that in 2025 means that the levels of groundwater can't recharge, which means we're starting from a low base already. So what we're needing to get is a couple of years of above average rainfall during the autumn and winter to push those groundwater levels back up to something which is a little bit more sustainable going forward. And one thing that we're starting to notice is things like snowfall patterns and that kind of thing.
We don't get the snow.
We don't get them. I live in Speyside, which is an area which was affected by drought last year quite significantly, even in the River Spey. And that's because of quite poor levels of snow in the previous year. And even when snow is falling, it's falling in great big dumps. You know, you're having 2 or 3 days of heavy snowfall, and then it soon gets, you know, the temperature rises, the snowfall, then basically there's a rapid melt, which then turns to flooding, which causes other issues for the agricultural community as well. So there's a whole compound issues of why there is going to be more chance of drought between now and going forward, because of, you know, those recharges of groundwater, changing weather conditions, climate change is obviously an issue. And there's many other reasons why as well. But yes, the chance of drought is definitely getting significantly more, and it's something that we need to plan for.
Yeah, I think the lack of refill of groundwater is quite significant.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about mitigation measures that farmers can do to get water, because the water's not there.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because groundwater always seemed to be the thing that you could go to as something to rely on. But it's one of those things that now we need to think about it a little bit more, saying, oh, groundwater is always going to be there, but it's not something that we can just fall back on automatically. We need to make sure that if we are pushing abstraction users to use groundwater, we need to make sure that the source there is suitable for them to use. Yeah. Otherwise, we're just moving the problem from one area to another.
Yeah, not finding a solution.
Yeah.
So with the trends showing that droughts are just going to become more common, how can the agriculture community build resilience into their day-to-day management?
There's a whole heap of things that you can do. I mean, obviously speak to your consultant, and SEPA have got information on our website about kind of the what you can do. But some of the highlight a couple of the things which always come up in conversations when it comes to me. One of the concerns is everything costs a lot of money. And there is going to be a financial output for some of these kind of things, but it's one of those kind of things. Now we can almost guarantee that drought or water scarcity is going to be an ongoing impact onto the business. It's something that needs to be thought about long term rather than short term. But there are some things which agriculture is leading the way on, and it's the thing which is beneficial not just for water scarcity, but also for flooding, soil health, all these kind of things. It is improvements to soil management. It's something which can be done on every farm. Even if you think you've got the best soil in the world, there's always something you can do to tweak it. It could be looking at what crops are going in there. It could be utilizing your greening areas. It could be getting more frequently putting in things like soil organic material, that kind of stuff. It's about getting that soil in the best condition it can be, so that it can soak up the water when it needs to soak up the water in flood conditions, but also retain that water and retain that moisture in those drought periods. Because it is, we say it, I'm not the only one who says this. Every time I go have a meeting with farmers, soil is the most valuable resource on that farm other than the farmer themselves. You know, if you get your soil right, you can really does give you that buffer for so many environmental events, that extreme weather kind of thing. Use your soil as a buffer. If we're working with the water, so if we're building irrigation ponds, if we're looking at how we're managing our irrigation of our crops and that kind of stuff, that should be done second. First, yeah. Look at the soil. Look at the properties you've got on your farm already that can benefit not just volumes of water you've got available to throw on your crop as and when required. It's about how you get that sustainable crop in that field and how that soil helps you have a more sustainable and more robust farm to allow you to cope with those extremes in weather. So there's one thing. I touched on the other one, those kind of the kind of mechanical things, the kind of infrastructure you can build around things. That there is a myriad of methods of improving irrigation on your farm and on your land, very much crop dependent. So yeah. Different things for potatoes as there would be for soft fruits and brassicas and that kind of stuff. But what I would suggest is speak to your friends and colleagues and consultants and people out there, salesmen, if you dare to invite them onto your farm, you know, speak to them about what's the best thing to use on my farm. And it's worthwhile spending that time to make the right investment on it. You know, just simple things like check for leaks, you know, make sure that your abstraction nozzle is in the right place. Make sure you're not abstracting gravels at the same time as you're abstracting the water. So there's day-to-day practical tips you can do, but making sure you've got the right kit for the right right crop. And if you go down the route of irrigation ponds, I know recently there's been some funding available for irrigation ponds, which can be quite an expensive outlay, but they are a fantastic backup and it will save some people's crops if they have those on their farm. But it's a big outlay, so it's something you need to have a look at to make sure that you're putting it in the right time, putting it in the right location, it's the right volume, and it's constructed appropriately and all those kind of things. So it's certainly something you need to speak to your consultant about. And again, you know, they are cropping up across the country more and more frequently. So potentially there might be somebody nearby who's bit the bullet, they've built one, and they could sing to you about the success, but also they could tell you about the problems that are up as well.
Or lessons learned.
Lessons learned. There you go.
Yeah, no, I think on EECS right now, there is funding, I think, till June 2026. So if you are interested in it, speak to your advisor.
Yeah, that's one thing that you need to be quick to act on, some of these funding streams, because they do only have short windows. Yeah. It's just the way we are at the moment with the short windows for availability of funding. Yeah, so definitely. If you've got an idea, get it on the back burner, and when somebody says there's some funding available, you're there to go for it.
Yeah. And also it's like looking to who to speak to. You're like, your local Rivers Trust can be a great bridge to either talk to, like, the community of people around you, or they might have funding, access to funding, or just information that can really help you and your local area.
SEPA have done quite a lot of work, and I think we're going to increase the amount of work that we do with local fisheries trusts, because they are a wealth of knowledge. They've got the contacts, and like you said, they're a good bridge between SEPA as the regulator and the land managers. They've got a kind of an on-the-ground realistic view of what's happening where and what the challenges are, and quite a few of them have got links with the agricultural sector, which is fantastic, and it can be the place that we find out things through them, you know. So if you got the chance to speak to some of these fisheries trust officers and stuff, they're really, really useful, and like you said, they often have pots of money which are available at short periods of time, but they may have pots of money which might help you out in the season.
Yeah, or put you in touch with like local businesses and stuff that might be interested in helping as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's all sorts of new funding models which are coming into the agricultural world. So it's not just the public funding that's available. There is quite a lot of private funding schemes, and sometimes these kind of extreme weather kind of circumstances that we're finding ourselves in really lend themselves to this kind of private kind of methods of funding, because it's long-term investment for long-term gains to the environment and the local community as well.
Yeah, it's kind of got to the point now that we need to start doing something to help build resilience, because it's not going away. We can't hide from it.
And it's one of those things, I've always been a regulator now for SEPA for 20 years, and I've always looked at those win-win situations. And, you know, having water resilience on your farm is a win for you. It's a win for your business, but it's also a win for the community. It's, you know, it could have huge impact on things like flooding and water resilience and all these kind of things throughout the whole catchment. So again, looking at that catchment scale is a good opportunity. And that's the kind of thing that potentially you could, there could be opportunities to have kind of like small group meetings with farmers with similar concerns and that kind of stuff. And that's probably something that can be coordinated through your consultants or through those community groups that you've got, which are led by the fisheries trusts as well. So there's plenty of opportunities to get those conversations going, to think about long-term solutions to this really challenging position that we're in at the moment.
Yeah, because we want to try and help as many people as we can.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, definitely.
So obviously, like, I felt like November and December were just really dry. I'm like centre belt of Scotland, so I just felt that they were particularly dry. And then obviously January has been wet, but not, well, for us, not particularly soaking wet. How is there any guide of how 2026 will pan out?
Yeah, obviously things are forecasts, so it's take everything with a little bit of a pinch of salt. But one thing which is quite a good indicator is, like what I said earlier on in the podcast, is that groundwater recharge. So there's evidence to show that the groundwater recharge just hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still below levels of groundwater. Rainfall November, December were particularly dry. January seen a little bit of a blip, but speaking to our hydrologists, what they're looking for is sustained significant rainfall for a number of weeks will be required to increase that level of groundwater. So we haven't received that, but we are monitoring that and we'll see what's happening. The autumn water scarcity statement comes out in December and gives an idea of what the last 3 months of 2025 looks like. And then 2026, the first date we need to look at is the first week in March. And that gives us the winter water statement and also provides us a forecast of going forward into the coming first few months of 2026. So it'll give us an idea of what things look like going into the season for 2026. And if we're seeing those low levels of groundwater, if we're seeing low levels of rainfall, again, they're things that we can say, right, okay, heads up. We haven't had the volumes of water that we expected during the winter. Plan for a dry summer. Again, it's only a forecast. So I wouldn't hang my hat on working a year by year, because it's one of those kind of things you need to invest now so that you get the benefits going forward and going into the future. But 2026, it may not be as dry as 2025. It's very unusual to get 3 years on the bounce, which have been very dry. 24 was quite dry. 25 was very dry. If it's 26 is dry again, it's quite unusual, but we are in unusual circumstances at the moment. So it'll be just interesting to see what happens. But keep on track with the information that's provided by SEPA on the water scarcity pages and also through Farming and Water Scotland as well.
Yeah, we'll try and update as we go. And I suppose it's like providing like podcasts like this. And we've got our newsletter, which is quarterly, which we're trying to highlight different things that farmers can do to try and help mitigate these I suppose unusual, but potentially going to be normal circumstances.
Yeah, I think we need to change some of the language we use around water. Mm-hmm. You know, unusual circumstances. You know, we see flooding nearly every year now. Yeah. We see water scarcity every year. It's just one of those kind of things we need to build into. Unfortunately, it's one of those things we have to build into day-to-day business now and start by changing those conversations we're having so that people they've got it on the mind. So it's not as it's always going to be a worry or a concern, but the more prepared we can be by providing the information that you require in a way which is suitable for you to listen to or read or whatever it is, that's the role that we can play as regulators and as Farming Water Scotland can as well as an advice body as well.
Thank you, Pete. That was really, really interesting. And hopefully it was helpful to those listening today. And I want to thank you for joining us today. We'll save any of the links or links to funding and our websites in the notes of the podcast. And if you've enjoyed listening, please like, subscribe and follow our podcast wherever you've been listening to them. And please get in touch if you want to find out any more information. You can listen back to all previous episodes in the series and other podcasts we produce for Farming Water Scotland on any podcast provider. Farming Water Scotland is funded by Scottish Government and delivered by SEC Consulting in partnership with SEPA to help farmers and land managers reduce diffuse pollution risk and benefit the farm business.